Back weeks. Feels good.
Welcome back to the You Never Know podcast, where, well, you never know who we're gonna have on or what we're gonna talk about. How we feeling this week?
Feeling pretty good. We got a pretty bright, young, intelligent mind
gracing us with his presence.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what he has to say.
Back to back weeks too. It feels good.
Yeah.
Something new.
Well, speaking of such, our guest this week, kind of, it's been a little bit of everywhere as of recent, doing some good things for the community and the hopefully the country. Without further ado, Mr. Cooper Conway.
Ooh, how you doing?
Doing well. How do you get these to work?
And now they get a little bit tangled. There you go.
All right.
All set?
Yeah, I think so.
I can hear him.
How we feeling today, Coop?
Feeling good. I'm happy to be on the podcast. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so kind of just as usual, as we know, you're Cooper Conway, a senior here at Boise State. Before we kind of jump into that, why don't you just give us a little bit of your background growing up in the Coov and kind of what led you to coming to BSU?
Yeah, so I grew up in Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon. I went to a small private Christian school basically my whole life. My dad was my teacher all 4 years of high school. And
for like every class?
No, not every class. Oh. It was a small school. We only graduated 49 students. That was my whole class, and like six of them came out here to Boise. But I went to, he was my English teacher.
Okay.
So he taught me how to write, which is what I'm doing now.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's awesome. Shout out Chris Conway for sure. But I came out here because I had a little friend, fourth grade, who would just rock the Boise State gear all the time, tried to get me to come out to Idaho. Love Boise State football, and I kind of followed him out here because he told me this is a great place. And I got the chicken and waffles at Fork, and there was a sunset as I walked out, and I was like, this is the place for me. I want to go to school here. And so that's basically how I came out here, and then just have had a great experience, and so blessed to be able to go to Boise State, to be honest with you.
It's good. Yeah, I feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. Had you ever been out to Idaho before orientation or coming to visit campus?
No, I swore I would never step foot in Idaho. I didn't want to be here. I know this is your home, but I just didn't think that this was going to be a place I like, but the people here are friendly. The people here are nice, and I don't know how to explain it to everyone, but I came on campus. People were saying hi to me on the street. Just felt like home, and I never had that. People, like, back home, when people say hi to you, you're like, that's kind of weird. Like, why are you saying hi to me?
Really?
But people are just friendly here. Yeah.
That's definitely a stereotype outside of Idaho. Someone saying hi to you, it's probably because they want something. They go back to California, like, if they say hi to you, it's probably like, hey, get the hell out of my way. Like, it's not a, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, it's not always the most pleasant thing.
Yeah.
But you said you went to Christian school pretty much your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
How does that really, like, differ from, like, public or normal school?
With my Christian school, it was pretty much kind of run the same. Like, our snow days, for example, like, we usually just followed the public school. But we had a Bible class, and then every Wednesday we had, like, a chapel. And then throughout our courses, we just kind of had a Christian perspective. It's something that I appreciated. It's something that my faith is very important to me. Still to this day, but it was just something that kind of was ingrained within the school. So I went to a public school early on, kindergarten through first grade, but my dad got the job, and so then I transferred schools over to Kingsway.
Okay, so is that like an elementary through high school school?
Yeah, it's a preschool, actually, through high school.
Oh, dang. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have many of those out here.
I went to private Catholic school for preschool, or maybe it's kindergarten to eighth grade. That was it. I didn't go to high school though. That's a long long time to be at the same school.
Yeah, there's like every graduation, there's always a couple like for lifers, like literally preschool through 12th grade, all the way through. It's just, it's a weird dynamic because they feel like your brothers and sisters. Still like some of my best friends, like I'm still in contact with them, even though we've kind of gone toward different places, colleges. Like I go to their weddings now, they're having kids. It's weird. It's very much a family environment.
It is crazy though. I swear like once a week I'll go on Facebook or Instagram and see somebody from my high school, whether I knew them well or not, and they're getting engaged or
married or having a kid.
Yeah.
It
gets pretty nuts out there.
It's kind of crazy to start thinking about. It's like, I'm not ready for that, but some people are at this point in their lives.
I'm still just a borderline college alcoholic. Yeah. You guys are getting your life together.
Yeah, it's crazy. This summer, one of my best friends, Riley, got married, and he, like, in high school, he was, like, kind of like the dumb guy. Like, I love Riley, but just, like, academically not there, made a lot of poor choices. And then at the wedding, he was just, like, a completely different person. Like, his wife, and it just, like, changed his life fundamentally. And the rest of us are, like, there's, like, 20 guys in the back of the wedding, like, just frat stars, basically, most of them. A lot of guys went to ASU as well, and just, like, completely different dynamics, but so happy for him. And it's cool to see where people go, you know.
Yeah. So I haven't been to Washington too many times. I've been to, like, mostly, like, SeaTac, and that's about it. How is Vancouver specifically? Is it like a smaller city or what's it like down there?
It's not exactly smaller. A lot of people usually live in Vancouver because you can travel into Portland, and the taxes are lower. So that's like what my mom did. That's why we were brought there, from San Francisco, the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's basically just like a pretty common like suburb of Portland is how I would, nothing too crazy. But has the aspect of the city that you can go to Trailblazers games, Timbers games, those type of things.
I found it when I visited, I found it super confusing to navigate. Like, Kobe picked me up from the airport and it was in Portland, obviously, but we drove across the bridge back over to the Washington side. And like, literally as soon as you cross the border, it's Vancouver. Like that's the first thing that like you cross into. But then there was like where Blake lives, Vancouver. Like, I guess I don't know if that's still considered Vancouver, but then there was, like, where we went and ate that night. I don't remember the name of that restaurant. It was some burger place that's, like, you know, Vancouver, like, a staple.
Burgerville?
Yeah, Burgerville.
Yes.
But that area was, like, so different. I was, like, lost the whole entire trip. It seemed very big and spread out, but maybe living there, it's not very big.
It is a little spread out. It's a little weird because the city's right there, but at the edge of Vancouver, it's very rural. A lot of farms, but that's kind of changing. And then downtown Vancouver is basically my whole life was kind of a dump. But now they're really just revitalizing the area. So lots of change there recently. I'm glad they took you to Burgerville. That's like our In-N-Out.
I think you were there. Ooh. I think you were the one telling me, dude, this is our In-N-Out. Not even close. Like,
I
think you and Blake. Yeah,
I've had Burgerville. I didn't think it was anywhere close to In-N-Out.
I don't think it's anywhere close to In-N-Out personally, but some people swear by it.
In-N-Out's not that good.
It was all right. I don't know.
Is it a chain or is there just one?
Yeah, it's a chain. It's like pretty big, but.
But it's only P&W, right? Or like specifically Washington, right?
Washington, Oregon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never heard of that place. Mm.
Yeah, you're not missing it.
Yeah, it's nothing crazy.
But in comparison to Boise, how is it bigger or smaller?
A little bit smaller.
Okay.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like Boise, where you have like the city and then you have all the rural right outside of it.
Yeah, very similar.
Just not as big as a downtown. I guess the downtown would be the Portland part of Vancouver. If you cut off downtown, Boise would be exactly Vancouver, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. How far is Vancouver from Portland?
Like 15-minute drive from my house to Portland.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. But kind of, you know, graduating like from a Catholic high school and stuff like that, I don't know if it's a thing, if there's like Catholic colleges or anything like that, but is there like a lot of almost pressure to go to almost like a religious school after high school?
Yeah, so we weren't Catholic by denomination. We're just kind of like more Protestant, evangelical. But there is a lot of scholarships that are provided to go to Christian schools, partnerships with the high school. And that same, our rival was a Catholic high school, and they had, like, a lot of them had more pressure to go to, like, Notre Dame type deal.
Oh, gotcha.
Where for us, it was, like, Grand Canyon University. would kind of come out and recruit pretty hard, pretty heavily, and give us a nice scholarship because we went to a Christian high school.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so kind of segueing into Boise, you didn't want to step foot into the state beforehand. You got here, you had your chicken and waffles, saw the sunset, fell in love. How's the last 4 years just been for you?
It's been crazy. It's been nuts. COVID is one thing. Life prior to COVID was weird as well. I came out here my freshman year, pretty standard. I got my first girlfriend at the time. She was great. But I remember one day she was like, you know what? You're lazy. I kind of dropped the ball, to be honest with you. In my high school, I was very much a go-getter. I was our salutatorian, so not valedictorian. There was a girl that became becoming a doctor who just
What's the difference?
It was salute.
Second place.
Runner-up. Yeah.
Oh, runner-up.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah.
Salutatorian?
Yeah.
Just don't rub it in.
It hurts to this day. But yeah, she's super smart, so I had to give it to her. But
damn, that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was...
Very impressive, actually.
You think if it came down to it today, could you beat her? No, because she's becoming a doctor, she'd still get it over you.
No, she was brilliant.
No, but if you compared resumes today, could enter out of
it? No, I couldn't. I could not. She works at hospitals, does a bunch of research on
You guys were all fighting for second place there. Is that kind of how
that's exactly how it felt. And it was brutal. You just knew you couldn't beat her. She was just so smart. She's a good friend of mine, but yeah.
Dang. That's cool. So what you said, you're your dad taught you English and that's what you're doing now. What's your exact major?
So I'm a political science major, but I write. So I usually, in my position now, I'm with an organization called Young Voices. And so there's about 60 of us that are active, worldwide. So, America, UK, Australia, Latin America. And I think we might've gotten a kid from Canada, this new class. And so basically we write on liberty-focused issues.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm going to have you pull that mic just a little bit closer to your...
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
You're good.
And so basically they give us the original program. You go 6 months of training and how to write. And then you go on radio. Then you go on TV. And then you can give speeches and whatnot. And it's kind of a whole career track type deal. And so I've been with them for a little over a year now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So being a poli-sci major... I think we know a couple people who are doing that too. School wise, is that pretty tough? What type of I don't even know, are you writing or
what use is it, Coop?
That's a good question. Actually, so my freshman year, this is what I meant when I was becoming kind of a bum. I just wasn't really focusing on my schoolwork at all, wasn't passionate. I just threw business down just because that was the major. That's what everyone did, just to kind of get out of the way. And then I switched to poli-sci. I remember after I did that, literally a week after, I grabbed lunch with Ryland's dad, and he goes, my nephew, he only, he works at, Verizon and hasn't done anything with us. Just trashes his nephew. And he looked at me, he's like, you're probably going to be the same. And I remember the next week I wrote an essay talking about Ryland's dad. And I wrote a whole essay talking about him doubting me and how I was going to prove him wrong. And I don't think I've ever told you that story, Ryland.
He's your origin story.
He is. And so then I switched to poli-sci. And then after that, I was looking for work. I hadn't taken a poli-sci class. And then I got connected with a community nonprofit in inner city Baltimore. And then kind of my career, you could put in quotes, kind of just took off from there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you want to talk about your internship and stuff? Cause I always heard you were in Baltimore or DC and stuff like that, but I didn't actually know what the fuck you were doing out there.
Yeah. So in South Baltimore, I'm pretty gangly, white kid. I was I'm 6'1", basically 160 pounds at the time. And my fro was just out of this world. And I went down there, cause I just got connected with this nonprofit. They said they would house me and that I'd help run their education programming, because education is what I'm very much interested in doing.
For inner city kids?
Yes. And so I got down there and realized quickly that I stood out like a sore thumb. I don't look like any of the kids there. And that it was just it was just a different neighborhood. I grew up in a pretty nice neighborhood. I went to a private school. And the kids there, their public school was kind of in tatters, just in shambles, basically. The room that I was staying in had bullet holes where previous shots had gone through. I'd find like needles on the sidewalk, like all four corners of like where the nonprofit like community was at was patrolled basically by prostitutes. And it was just like a very, like one of the more dangerous neighborhoods there. And so there was a lot of respect for like where I worked, but outside of it, it was dangerous. Like I know multiple people that got shot. My boss had like a knife pulled on her when we were down there doing some work, but it was some of the most impactful things that I've ever done. And the people I have the most respect for because I care about the community.
When was this?
This was when I was 19. So summer 2019.
So pre-COVID, huh, right before COVID. Huh?
Pre-COVID, yes.
Yeah.
And so I ran the education programming for that, where I'd usually work with kids, just kind of teaching them how to read. And a lot of the times, the kids just didn't really read very well. And I remember, it's a Christian one, so I asked a little girl to, she's in fifth grade, right, to read a passage out of the Bible. And her twin brother comes up to me and whispers in my ear and says, you know, I don't really feel, she doesn't feel comfortable reading out loud. And she's 10 years old, right? That's a serious, serious problem. And so I talked to my boss and I said, what's the deal here? Like, why are these people that I'm working with, these kids that I care so much about, why can't they read? And she said, like, you need to do research into this for yourself, because like the schools here are a complete mess. And so since then, that's like stoked my fire, like my passion for like wanting to help every kid, like no matter their background, have the same educational opportunities that I had, to be able to go to college, to be able to get a job, to be able to graduate high school, like those type of things.
Damn, that's great. We need a lot more people like you.
And all these kids, they were different ages, right? Like it was a pretty wide age range.
Yeah, there was mostly elementary students and then some middle school students.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised like a nonprofit would let their like employees stay in somewhere like that dangerous, where there's bullet holes in the door and stuff like that.
I mean, that was like, it was,
or did you kind of know what you were signing up for?
I knew what I was signing up for. Like, it was on site. It was on campus. It was safe. I think that was for, like, those bullet holes were, like, from previous years. They don't have a lot of money, right? Like, they don't have tons of funders to be able to donate and just give them all the money they need to, like, help these people in various ways, especially to fix a window. Like, that's pretty trivial in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're probably trying to put the money to, like, better things, just all the education, obviously, instead of just getting a nicer place, probably.
Yeah, I can give you a little like info on what they do. Like every Saturday, they feed about 100 families and provide them groceries for the entire week, for free. And they do it with like dignity. So they let the people go in and shop for themselves and let them choose instead of just giving them a bag and leaving. Mm-hmm. Like they'll talk to them, they get to know them. Right now, they just launched a new clothing business that's helping recently people that just left jail, give them some money, some work, so that they can get back on their feet. They feed the homeless every Tuesday and Thursday, like a hot, warm meal, sit down with them, talk to them. They have the education programming for the kids. And they have, when I was there, they had three employees, a pastor of a church, his daughter, and then a guy named Tank. And that was it.
How'd he get that nickname, or is that his real name?
His name's Matt, but he's just like short.
He's just a tank.
Built like he's just a dude. Like just built like one, you know?
Just a dude.
And that was all they had. They had little to no money. And it's growing a little bit now, but the amount that the impact that they had on the community is huge for what they have.
Okay. And that was just the summer, right? We got there for the summer. Okay.
Yep.
So you come back for your sophomore year.
I didn't come back for my sophomore year. I was supposed to. And then I left Baltimore, about 2 week gap between that and then when school was supposed to start. And I get a call from one of my dad's former English students, and she is a legal fellow at this massive think tank in Washington, D.C. And she says, hey, I know you're studying political science. Do you know anyone in your program that would be willing to take this job? And I talked to her in the spring. She said, we only like hire interns that are like seniors, graduate students. And I said, I'll take the job. Like, I'll fly out there right away. I hadn't taken a poli-sci class. I had no idea what I was doing. I was the youngest intern that they've ever had. I was like 19. I was 19. They called me the baby. And like everyone just kind of laughed when they saw me because I just stood out like a sore thumb. I don't think I knew how to tie a tie properly at the time, like when she called me. And so I went out there and it was just a complete shock. It was about a 45-minute drive from Baltimore, but just a whole new world. There was times where I would just walk in and there's like a senator that's just talking to like one of my bosses. Mike Pence, vice president at the time, came and talked to us. And, like, I met Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Just had this kind of life-changing experience from a whole different perspective of, like, these are people trying to help the people that I'm with, but also a lot of them, there's definitely, like, a little gap in terms of, like, the worlds. The worlds are different. Right. Like, you don't always know that those people are there in Baltimore when you're so focused on creating policy in Washington, D.C.
And it's pretty – how long were you in D.C.?
I was in D.C. for 3 months.
Okay. And what were you doing there as an intern?
So I was doing research on guns, Second Amendment type stuff, which was big at the time. I had never shot a gun in my life. and so I actually shot a gun for the first time at the NRA headquarters.
That's pretty sick.
It was a cool experience, for sure. I was terrified. I liked it was a good experience, but not something that's like something I'm comfortable with at all.
Not a gun nut. What what gun did you shoot?
An AR-15 platform, then like a 9mm, and then my boss shot like a bolt action. I saw that and I said, I don't think that's for me. Yeah.
That's so funny.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Sweet.
But okay, so you were in DC doing the internship for that poli sci company. Mm-hmm. So did you come back to school like that spring of like for COVID, or how did like where's all that kind of line up?
Yeah. So I came back that spring, and then the summer I was supposed to go to Taiwan. Then the fall after that I was supposed to go to Italy. And then spring after that, I was supposed to go back to D.C. And then in March, COVID hit. So I got to do none of those things, which was just, like, utterly, like, just heartbreaking at the time. Like, I was just so excited to be able to have my college experience.
I got to go back to Boise and deal with all these guys.
Yeah, but also it was humbling because it was, like, the things that I wanted to do were selfish. And, like, those were things that I wanted to focus on myself instead of, like, trying to help other people. And especially during COVID when so many other people are struggling so much worse than, like, my family and I were healthy. Like, I haven't even gotten COVID yet. Like, the people around me were healthy. And so it was just a good opportunity to where I was sent back home in that March after COVID. And then I just worked at, like, a food shelter in Portland because I'm on the healthier side. So I wasn't as worried about COVID. And there's tons of homeless people in Portland that need that help. And so we distributed food basically for the next few months.
Dang.
Super nice.
Yeah. And Rylan, we were mad we couldn't go to Vancouver for a weekend because of COVID. This guy, his whole life gets turned upside down.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, what was it that really just made you want to like make such a big difference like in the community? Because you went from the, as your ex-girlfriend said, the lazy freshman who doesn't really care to wanting to go all over the world to kind of help out.
Yeah, I think I got a part of it was like I was disconnected from like my faith and like what I want to do to help serve other people. Like I said earlier, that was something that was important to me. And so when I got here freshman year, like I wasn't really focused on that and like some of the higher callings into my life. And then when I worked with those kids, I realized these kids don't have like the same education opportunity that I had to go to a private school. And I was only able to go to private school because my dad got a full scholarship for my sister and I because he was a teacher there. A lot of kids just, like, can't afford it. And I was like, what's the deal? And I'd always heard that public schools were underfunded. And then when I was in D.C., I was looking at the numbers of how much money is put into Baltimore's public school system. And it's around $15,000 a child, which is a lot of money. And so it's not necessarily a funding problem either. It's, like, how the funding is distributed.
Yeah, where was all that money going if – it was so bad.
That's a great question. But it one thing's for sure, it doesn't reach the kids. It doesn't reach the teachers. And so now what I advocate so strongly for and what's this week is National School Choice Week. And so outside on 8th and Main is the building is all lit up in the red and yellow colors. And what that symbolizes for students and really families across the country is the opportunity to go in education, have an education that works best for you. And so that $15,000, instead of just going into the system that is so broken and corrupt, goes directly into the students' pockets. And so that $15,000 could go into a mother's pockets so she can decide, well, if I want to homeschool my kid, that works best for me, and now I have the funding to be able to do that. Or if I want to send them to a private school, $15,000 is more than enough to pay for the average private school tuition, which is around $12,000. Send them to a charter school. A lot of parents during the pandemic, for example, created micro schools within their neighborhoods as the schools were shut down. And so they were able to take that funding and just create new schools and get themselves jobs and pay themselves to teach their kids.
Is this all like government funded?
Yes. So basically the average nationwide is like a little over $15,000 for students. And so basically you just take that money that would directly go into the public school and just give that to the family. So like, say there's a single mom in Baltimore. She's underemployed, doesn't make a ton of money, but she has three kids. Mm-hmm. She's able to get $45,000, homeschool her kids. On average, homeschooling is like $1,200 tops. She can take the rest of the money for herself and basically mm-hmm. provide for her family while also creating a unique bond with her children. And homeschooling also has a ton of other benefits as well in terms of like test scores and whatnot. And so that's kind of just off the top of my head is something that I really care about. And so I knew like if I want the opportunity for every child, like no matter their background, no matter their zip code, to be able to attend a school that works best for them. And right now that's just not the case in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great cause. Definitely.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
Almost left speechless. Yeah, no, you didn't get paid for any of this.
So at the beginning, no, I did not. So my work, we just do like basically freelance. So you send an article, it either gets accepted, you get some edits back, you say that's good to go, you publish it. And so at first I was just doing this because it's something I cared about. And that was basically it. Now I'm a columnist at like a education activist organization called Brightbeam. I write for another outlet called America's Future. And then I contribute to other places and they'll pay me a little bit of money, which is nice just to pay for groceries or food on the side. But I'd be doing it for free even if not. I only get that opportunity just because I've been at it for over a year now.
What's been like your most biggest piece or like biggest contribution, would you say? Or like what's the one like maybe you're most proud of or like, you know, went to the biggest name?
Yeah. The biggest publication that I've ever been in, like had my name published in, was the Wall Street Journal. And that was huge.
You have the article? Like, do you like print it out or?
it's like a little blurb. They let students be able to talk. And so I'm able to kind of do that. But the ones, when you ask like the most impact, usually it's like the local publications. And so last year, for example, Idaho had a bill up for school choice. Didn't get passed, unfortunately. I think it's going to be passed again. I think it's going to be passed this year. But I wrote something in the Idaho Press. People read that. I can directly say, this is the bill. This is how it's going to fund students. And that makes an impact. And so last year, 18 states passed education choice legislation, which changed like thousands of children's lives to be able to have access. So those, it's at the state level because schools aren't run at the federal level.
Okay. So we don't have it in Idaho yet, the school choice?
We have a little bit of school choice. We have charter schools, but we don't allow parents. We don't give parents direct access to the funds. No.
Okay. That makes sense.
So I'm curious. A lot of the people you like work and volunteer with, helping like the inner city kids and less fortunate and stuff like that, are a lot of them kind of coming from a place you do where it's like you grew up more fortunate and stuff like that, so you want to give back? Or is it a lot of people who were kind of growing up, you know, in the inner city and with not a whole lot of money and opportunity and want to make that change?
It's a mix of both for sure. A lot of them, a lot of churches are very active in these communities. But a lot of the people there, like they work with the churches because they know they're effective, but they also want something different for like the people in their neighborhood and their community. And so it's definitely a mix of both, but both can be effective. It really depends on how you attack it. If you care, if you're there for the long haul, a lot of people like just kind of come in for a little bit and then they leave, which is fine. It helps a little bit, but I mean, I think of my boss, Mallory, and she's just there. She's committed her whole life to this, and she's like 28 now, and she's fully invested. I think she's going to be the mayor of Baltimore one day, to be completely honest with you. And she's changed so many people's lives in this neighborhood.
Mayor of Baltimore, that's pretty sick.
I mean, that's what I think is going to happen, but we'll see.
If she ever is, make sure to pull the tape and let her know you called it first.
Yeah. Let's get her on the You Never Know podcast, too, while we're at it.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems like just a crazy experience. I mean, obviously, it was for you and kind of just life-changing. So where does that kind of take you next after you graduate in the spring?
Yeah, I have a few options. It's all under the basic like foundation of not what I want to do, but like what I ought to do. Like, what is the purpose that I'm doing these things? Because that's going to be providing the fulfillment. There's a Harvard professor named Arthur Brooks who talks about happiness, and like 50% of our happiness is genetic, which is crazy. But we can make like 4 decisions in our life that actually affects our happiness. And that's how we attack faith, how we attack family, community, and then self-earned, earned success. And that earned success is the work and vocation. So right now I'm looking at going to maybe graduate school. I applied for a fellowship at the Wall Street Journal, which is a complete long shot. And then I'm just looking at things that I can make an impact and I can use my my gifts for good.
Right. Is there like one particular job or issue or anything you want to kind of, you know, take forth and kind of be like your centerpiece for your career?
Yeah, I think education and the school choice is something that's important. But that's really to a means to an end of one day opening up like a tuition-free private school for these families, especially if I could do it back in South Baltimore. That would be fantastic. That would be dream come true. I hit the goals of my life. I impacted the people I wanted to impact. I think that would be very fulfilling.
Yeah. I mean, I think this would be like a government thing, but I remember like when Obama came and talked at Boise State, I remember him briefly talking about how he would like community college to be free, right? If you can't make a big public or private university free necessarily, at least that community college where then they can save up or get enough education to like set themselves up. Is that something that you guys could realistically help out with, or is that even?
Yeah, so the gold standard of this school choice legislation is called education savings accounts, which really lets families use the funds for any education-related expense, but also they roll over. So say I, it's $15,000 education savings account. I pay $10,000 a year for my kid's private school. I get $5,000 for the next 15 years. That's going to provide a huge chunk of money that people can spend for their college education. And I think that's something that could really help with student loan forgiveness and not being able to put in those places to begin with.
Yeah. Do you think the government did enough for students and people with COVID with those what was it called when you would
stimulus checks?
Yeah, with like the stimulus checks. How do you think all that was handled?
That's
free money. It was kind of awesome. I didn't get any though.
Yeah.
Seemed so cool. Everyone was like, "I got a stimmy." I was like, "I don't have anything. I'm still dependent, apparently."
Too early to tell. That'll be my answer for now. I do think that the recovery that we're making right now is pretty impressive in terms of how we're getting. We lost a ton of jobs, and how we're really rising back up. But that's a tough question. I mean. I don't know what the average money that was being given out to students.
I think it wasn't like 600 or something, like every like 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, that's
maybe. I don't
even
know.
Like that.
But I thought it was more ridiculous that so many universities went fully online and said, "We're either going to raise the tuition or we're going to like keep it as it is." I remember right. Boise State like iced theirs and capped it at whatever they were using before pandemic tuition. But I was still like, I'm paying $20,000 a year for the tuition. I'm paying for online school right now. Like, why would I pay the same? This isn't the same product that I'm receiving.
Yeah.
So that was a little upsetting. But I mean, I
can agree with that for sure. Dude. I was like in my head, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why am I not at like Purdue or what's the online Phoenix Online?
University of Phoenix. I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Like, didn't make any sense.
But to be honest with you, I think 50% of colleges in the next 20 years are going to go under. I don't think college is going to be as big a deal by the time that we're having kids and we're sending them off.
You think that's because of like the pandemic or just kind of
internet, dude? I feel like everyone's getting educated on the internet now. Mm-hmm. No one needs to do anything else.
And I think like even just like on a smaller scale, right? Like Zoom itself, right? Like, I don't think snow days are going to be a real thing anymore because if it is too much, the buses can't get to the school. It's like, all right, everyone hop on Zoom. You know, you're not off the hook.
That's terrible. I need to think about that.
Yeah. We should still have snow days. That's something I'll fight for.
We should. I mean, that was like one of the top best things. But in
kids
childhood,
need that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
your mom come in and tell you you can sleep in and go play with your friends. Like,
I never had that. I lived in California.
I only had 3 snow days my whole life.
Yeah, I had like one day there was maybe like a little frost on the ground.
It rained. Hey, we get a snow day.
Dang. Well, yeah, I remember in elementary school, my our principal, I don't think I got any in elementary school because she was from Alaska. So when we would get like, you know, 5, 6, 7 inches or whatever, and everyone expected a snow day, you know, she always had the mentality like, oh, well, you know, from Alaska, you know.
She'd go plow everyone's streets.
Yeah. Make sure everyone got it, like, wasn't a big deal to her. So, but yeah, in middle school and high school, we definitely had that stuff. But I guess just kind of on a lighter note for you, you live with our former El Presidente, former guest, David Houston. I lived with him 2 years ago. We've talked a little bit about that, but how's your experience with living with him?
I love living with David. I really, really do, because he's unique. For those that watch this episode, I'm sure you can tell that this person is not going to be like many people that you meet in your life. Just from his background, from his experiences working, from what drives him. I mean, he's fun. He's always got energy.
He is an enigma. That's like how I think of him.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the conversations that we have. I mean, I'll just like for a quick story, I was doing like second week into living with David. Couldn't sleep. I have some sleeping issues. I have a tough time sleeping. You know, my brain's just like all over the place. But I was doing our dishes, 2 a.m. Music. I have my like noise canceling headphones on, and I'm putting the plate back in, and I look up, and there's David with a knife and underwear, like ready to like chop me up. Like, he just hopped out of the shadows.
Like some hibachi.
Yep. He thought like I broke in and was stealing stuff from like our apartment. And I knew, like, I'm not messing with this dude.
No
this
way.
This guy is for real.
Oh, so he woke up and thought somebody broke in?
Yes. And he was in his underwear.
I thought you were going to say you guys sat down and had, like, a nice conversation.
I was about to say, because me and him would be up at 2 a.m. having nice conversations, but he never pulled a knife on me.
Yeah. No, he pulled a knife on me, like, a second week into living with him in his underwear. And I was just like, oh, this is different. Like, this is
Did you drop a dish and or what happened?
I just like jump a little bit. And I was like, dude, like I'm like, dude, I put my hands up. I'm like, I'm not stealing anything. He's like, okay, like we're good.
That's so funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean,
good old David.
Yeah, good old David. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on his conspiracies? What's his most realistic one, you think?
Dude. I don't know. I remember we watched, it was the, 20th anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah.
We watched a documentary, like, the night of 9/11. And then afterwards, I looked over at him, and he was just so upset because they're like, they're not talking about, like, how Bush did it. And I was like, I don't know about that one. Like, jeez.
We're not going to say it. Are you kidding me?
Everything's a conspiracy to that man.
Most realistic, he makes a pretty interesting argument.
He always has some points. I'll give him that. Yeah. He does always have points.
Yeah. The JFK one. That's the one that I'd say. I'm like, maybe he's got a point.
Yeah, I think I've heard that one too. I was like, oh, okay. I'm hearing you here. Yeah.
I think the Denver airport one is the one for me. What he makes about how we're going like into like.
I've heard that one a lot, like, though. Like the underground stuff. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that one a lot. And I think Denver airport just like looks like a swastika. It's kind of like creepy looking.
Yeah.
If you look at the way the runways are spread out, just because like they have so many wind patterns, so they have to have like a runway from every angle, but like they just doesn't look very good. I guess
even just like the white tents they have, like it looks like white tents. Like it's like
the inside of that airport looks like a bunker. Yeah. Like they have like those weird like in like the middle like that isn't by the gates. It's like temple like. And it's, like, dressed in, like, foresty stuff.
Yeah, because when I flew back from Cancun, that was where my connecting flight was in Denver. And, like, the customs was kind of, like, underneath, right? Because we had to get on the subway to, like, the terminals and then go up the stairs. And it was, like, it did not feel like a regular airport in a sense. It was, like, almost like not a bomb shelter, but kind of, like, similar vibe where it's, like, you almost just feel like you're being, like, stored away. It just it gave off, like, just a really eerie vibe.
It was super secure, kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like where they would take the president if there was, like, an attack on the U.S. or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be a good place to be in a nuclear bomb. Maybe just go, like, 3 stories down.
Maybe that's what it is.
Have you met the president, Coop? Either any of them?
I've never been a president, no.
to say, you have this long list of.
Were you know, able to talk to Mike Pence when he was?
No, they wouldn't let us get close. Like he came and spoke to.
Was he active? Sorry, was he active at the time?
Yeah, he was active at the time. So he came to my work, like and spoke in like one of our rooms that they host speakers at, and all the interns were kicked out for the day because we didn't have like security or anything. And so we had to like walk to like some other location, and that's where we worked, which was weird. And I remember the building that I lived was right next to the place, and there was Secret Service just like around the block. But then the one time that I actually like heard him speak, was like a dinner type deal. It was fine. It was pretty rah-rah, like pretty like pro like America type stuff, like the usual things that I guess you'd expect from a Mike Pence.
Were you able to see him with your own eyes at all? Or?
Yeah, I was like probably 30 feet away from him.
Wow. Short, yeah. Tall. What's your
remarkably? I don't know if I like. He was like average, like pretty like regular.
Wait, dude. Like, remarkably what?
Remarkably better, average. Okay. Like just seems like.
You better hope he doesn't see this.
Sorry, Mike, but like I just looked like he looked like he could be like my neighbor, like mowing the lawn or something, and probably that's a benefit to him, to be honest with you. But he seemed like really just like a very very chilled out dude.
Looks like your average Mike.
Exactly. Exactly. Mike. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember because when I was in Illinois over the summer, Biden was in one of the nearby cities, and we were probably like maybe 30 minutes to an hour away from where he was actually going to go talk. Mm-hmm. And still, like, we're going down the highway, and there's all these, like, Secret Service and cop cars and stuff, and it was like, you know, we're like 30 minutes away from where this guy's going to be in 6 hours, and it's like... You know, they shut everything down.
Dude, they got to make sure there's no snipers, anything like that. You got to check it all out.
No David Houston's.
No one to call you out on your conspiracies. Yeah. But, well, I mean, to kind of, I guess, wrap up here, we really appreciate you coming on. We haven't had a guest really like you where you just do so much for the community just because you care. It's really kind of cool and refreshing to see somebody like you putting in so much work to make the world a better place. And I know you had a plug. Was that for the lights?
Yeah.
Okay, so you squeezed it in there already. Uh-huh. Perfect. Well, Mr. Conway, we really appreciate you coming on. And until next time, you never know.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me. We'll be right back.